there are three, I decided a topic, three reasons on topic. One is Nagayat to Purim, not about drinking, about Purim. So we're finished with drinking. One about Purim. Two, it's Nagayat to the yeshiva just bought a new set of Svarim from this, our wonderful Svarim sale. We have this set of Svarim that we never had before called Medrash HaGado. And Medrash HaGado is a different Medrash. There's a, I think it's a Taimani Medrash. The Taimanim had, we have certain Midrashim got lost, but the Yemenites, they had other Midrashim that we don't have. And so therefore, this is a Medrash HaGado. So it came out, you know, the last 50 years when the Jews came out of Taiman. So the yeshiva never had this set. And Baruch Hashem, this person was selling here, if you know, selling it, bargain, $5 of value, right? So the yeshiva got a set, so it's relevant. So Rav Brook quoted a shmooze from the Medrash HaGado, but I never had the Medrash HaGado to see it inside. It's on the topic. And third reason, I was in New York, and there was a guy who told me this was his favorite vod. So even though I don't remember the vod, but the topics, he said. So let's talk about it. There's a, where everyone knows that we're Navardikas, right? So Navardik had, if you learn Navardik as Svarim, Navardik was very much in working on projects. And they divided the year into periods. You know, I don't know exactly. I would assume Rosh Hashanah, they worked on Tshuva. There are different parts of the year. They worked on different things. So the period before Purim, I was told from Rav Brook and other Navarik, is what's called, the period was called Lo Kavod Lo Zami Menu. It's based on a pasuk in Megillas Esther. That what happens, it says that Haman was coming out of Esther's party, and he's real happy, and he sees Mordechai. Ukiros Haman is Mordechai Bishar HaMelech, V'lokavit al-zami menu, and Mordechai is lokavit al-zami menu, V'yimodei Haman al-Mordechai chema, and he decides he's going to wipe him out. You know, he goes home, he says, what should I do? He says, Kol Zayin is Shavili, I'm so depressed, right? And his wife gives him the Eitzah to kill, to hang Mordechai, or the Achachamim, right? That's the story. So the kasha is, Mordechai never bowed down to Haman, right? That was why Haman decided to kill all the Jews. So what's the big deal that Haman bumps into Mordechai and he doesn't bow down to him? That happened already before, right? Nothing new happened. Why is Haman getting so upset? What did he, right? Haman went ahead. He, beforehand, a few parakim earlier, he meets Mordechai. Mordechai doesn't bow down to him. It says, Vayar Haman ki Mordechai korea mishtachavelo. Vayimorei Haman chema. Right? Which literally means that Haman got full of what?
Anger.
Oh, come on, you people. What is chema? Okay, fine. All right, anyway, so that's right. So it says, so what's happened here? Right, that's the question. So the Navardikers say as follows, that here, the first time it says, U'mordechai, ki'ei Mordechai korea mishtachvelo. It means he didn't bow down to him. Why did he want to bow down to him? Because he didn't want to treat Haman as an avodah zarah. But he obviously was very respectful, right? He said, he probably tilted his head, took off his hat, and said, hello, Amen. And right, so, you know, he gave him a lot of cut. He said, the Hedek of Haman, I'm so sorry I can't bow down to you, but, you know, my religion forbids, I don't know. But he didn't bow down. That's all the pasuk says. Then he says, again, Kiei Mordechai Korea Mishtachvelo. But over here, it says that what did Mordechai do? It says that I'll come to Zami Manu. It didn't say he didn't bow down. He didn't even stand up for him. He didn't even tremble a little bit. So Mordechai acted more here than before. So that's what drove Haman crazy. Okay, if Mordechai won't bow down, okay, I know he's not bowing down. But now he's going to the other extreme. Okay. Why did Mordechai go to the other extreme? So they say, because Haman thought that he's going to pressure Mordechai. Mordechai does, he says, you're not bowed down. I'll show you. You see, I'm going to make this gezeira, and you're going to come bowing down and begging me. Right? So Haman is trying to twist Mordechai's arm. Mordechai says, you think you can twist my arm? No way. Pumpfaker. You're trying to twist my arm? I'm not even going to stand up for you. So there, I'll show you. Yesterday, I stood up for you. Yesterday, I showed you respect. You want to pressure me? You can't pressure me. Just the opposite. I'll show you, right? So that was the meter they were working on. The meter was not to let yourself get pressured. That was they said that they spent about a month. It was like a very, those who know Nevardic, that was like an Iker of Nevardic. But not to be pressured by either someone pressures you or society, not to give in to pressure. So the month of Adar, there's a period where it's called Kavod Azal Mimenu. You don't give in to pressure. Mordechai wouldn't give in to pressure. Haman's trying to pressure him. You can't pressure me. I go the other extreme. Right. He told us a few stories, Rav Brook. He said he gave it a tzir. He said there was a city in Europe. He told us two stories. It's almost the same story, but he told it twice. He said there was a city in Europe that it was between World War I and World War II. So after World War I, most of the whole infrastructure in Europe got destroyed. So there were many cities that they didn't have, like yeshivas, that they should have had yeshivas. They didn't have yeshiva katanas. So there was a certain city, and it was missing a yeshiva. So the Chofetz Chaim, who cared about what's going on in Europe, whatever city this was, so he sent two of his best Talmidim to go there to start a yeshiva. Very important. So they went, and we wanted a letter from the Chofetz Chaim, and the letter to the Chofetz Chaim like opened all doors for them, you know. And they said, the Chofetz Chaim, these are my two very chashuv Talmidim. They should start a yeshiva there. Okay. The Maisa, they couldn't do it. Couldn't go. Didn't go. Okay. Can't do it. You're an Inus. Inus Rav on a Patre, right? A little later, they heard that Nevardik went to the same city, and they opened the yeshiva, and they succeeded. So they said they had Chalisha Zadas. Here, we had the backing of the Chofetz Chaim, and we couldn't do it. And these Nevardikers, they have no backing, no nothing, and they did it. So they decided to make an investigation. What did they do different than we did? So they asked the two Talmidim and the Chofetz Chaim, what did you do? He said, we came to the city, and we went right, the first thing we went, probably went to our inn, wherever we're staying. Then went to the Rav, and we showed the Rav the letters from the Chofetz Chaim, and the Rav got very inspired. Wow, Chofetz Chaim says, Tzivui, we have to do it. And the Rav called all the important Baal Batim, and he read them the Chofetz Chaim's letter, and everyone got all excited, and yes, 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 we must make a yeshiva. Chofetz Chaim says we have to do it. And then, after they're all pumped, one person says, okay, yes, we definitely have to do it, but let's be practical. How are we going to do it? It's the middle of the Depression. We have no money, no food, no building, no nothing. Said, well, we have to do it. Yeah, okay, yeah, of course you have to do it, but we have to figure out how. And they couldn't figure out how. So they didn't do it. Then they asked the Nevardikers, how did you start the yeshiva? He said, we came to the city, we went into a shul, we sat down, we started learning. Right? The Baal Batim come in for mincha. They go over to a guy. They say, excuse me, you're in my seat. What are you doing here? Don't bow to us. We're in the middle of learning. Excuse me, this is our shul. You have any questions, talk to him. He's in charge. I'm busy learning. Okay. They go to the guy in charge. They say, what are you people doing here? This is our, this is our shul. Not anymore. It's a yeshiva now. He says, what? He says, you can't do that. Well, we did. Okay. Then he said, by the way, these guys have been here all day and they haven't eaten a thing all day. You're going to let them starve? So that's how they succeeded. Okay. So then, that was the first story. Wait a second. The second story He told us the same story, except that he said that he did the same thing, basically. I was like, why? You know, we'll talk about the other guy did it. Okay. He said he did the basically. They sent him in a barge to the city. I think it was like a 10-hour train drive. They gave him, it was Erev Pesach. They gave him a kazayas of matzah, because the Navarik was broke. So in case he's stuck and he can't get him anyone, he has no food, he'll be able to be, I'd say, the kazayas of matzah. So they gave him a kazayas of matzah, no contacts, no nothing, start a yeshiva in this city. He says, so he basically, he did the same thing. He says he taught, during over Pesach, he went around talking to all the shuls, trying to drum up excitement. And then he saw it wasn't going anywhere because the people were, can't be done. So he just sent the telegram to Navarik, just send the Bachrim, and they started the yeshiva. Said the same thing. They went into a shul and they took over. Anyway, so the point is that was Lokovit Ozabimenu. Not to be afraid. Now, maybe there's some other tiny you can say, but one of them for sure is like a little bit afraid of things. Right? Navarikers were known to be fearless. And they were never not afraid of people. So he had a shmooze. That's why I want to tie it into the new sefer. Rav Brook, same person, had a shmooze, except I never saw the chazal inside. So he quotes it from the Medrash HaGadol. That it says in the Medrash HaGadol, on the pasuk here, that it says that Moshe went out, that it says that Hashem showed Moshe says, Shlach no biyad tishlach. So it says in Medrash HaGadol that Moshe sent, that Hashem showed Moshe all the different people, the Gedolim, and that's why Moshe said, "Send. Why don't you send with none of them?" So it says that Moshe saw Rabbi Akiva. So it has here all the stories about Rabbi Akiva. So it says as follows. Rabbi Akiva was 40 years old, he never learned. He married Bas Kalva Saiva. So she told him to go learn. So he says, how can I go learn? I don't know anything. And I'm all right, it's too late. I'm 40 years old, it's too late. Then it's this famous story that he saw the water, the rack, the hole in the rack. And they asked him how they get the hole. And he said the water dripping on the rack made the hole. So he says, oh, you see that even a rack, water can make a hole in a rack. So the Torah will make a hole. Okay, I guess I could learn. But he still didn't go. Why not? So his wife asked him, new now, why don't you go? So he said, what was his answer? Hello, Yitzhaku Alai. I can't go because they're going to laugh at me. 40 years old, I don't know anything. They'll laugh at me. So she told him, Bo Lasso's power. Let's make an amazing thing. She said, he said, what's that? He says, bring me a chamor that has some kind of, something wrong with his back. And it has like a hole in the back, like it's not smooth, whatever. And she filled up the hole with dirt. And she planted something in the dirt. And the dirt started to grow, right? So she told him, take this chamor to the shuk and say, you got an amazing chamor. You can have a portable farm, right? An amazing thing. You got a special chamor that's a portable farm, right? Wonderful. So a good husband, his wife says to do it, he did it. Okay, we'll have to crash it why he did it, okay? So he did it, and of course, everybody started laughing. It's a nut, You don't make a farm on your chamor, right? So they laughed at him. Second day, he came back again. Portable farm for sale, portable farm for sale. And again, he was a laughing stock. The third day, he came back, and no one laughed at him anymore. They're bored already. So he came back and told his wife, and she said, you see, you're afraid to go to learn because you're afraid they'll laugh at you. The first day they'll laugh, the second day laugh, they won't laugh after 3 days. So that much you can handle. So you get laughed after 2 days, you can handle it. So he went and learned. So Rav Brook Shmuz was that Rabbi Akiva was probably a very, very shtarka guy, right? We assume. And he was a pretty gutsy person. Otherwise, he wouldn't have become Rabbi Akiva. And yet, he wasn't going to learn because he was afraid that people were going to laugh at him. And if not for that raya that his wife brought him, we would have never had Rabbi Akiva. Pretty amazing. Klal Yisrael would have lost Rabbi Akiva because he's afraid of being laughed at. So Anyway, that was with Uzi. You can't let yourself be afraid that you're going to be laughed at. You might be the next Rabbi Akiva. You'll be lost to Klal Yisrael. Okay. Anyway, so that was a very, very big Navaritic thing. Not to worry about being laughed at. So how did a Navaritic, they solve this problem? So they practice being laughed at, exactly like Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva did something which made people laugh at him. So Navaritic, they used to do things that used to make people laugh at them and train themselves not to care, right? Which is a little rough. So, for example, they say that they used to go to the drugstore. In Europe, the drugstore was like the most chashiva. They didn't have necessarily doctors in every city. So in the little villages, the druggist was the most, he was like the doctor. He was like the most chashiva person in town, because they didn't have, like today, that medicine comes already made. The druggist made the medicine. So he prescribed the medicine. You came to him, you explained your symptoms. He says, oh, I'll make up a special medicine for you. So he was like the real chashiva person in town. So they would go to the drugstore and they would ask for nails. And nails, this means you're going to a blacksmith. And that was like, you know, excuse me, do you know you're in the drugstore, not in the blacksmith shop? Get out of here, you nut. So they would do that on purpose to train themselves not to care that they called a nut. The second thing he said they used to do is they would make a minyan for mincha in the middle of the street. They go to the busiest section of the city, in downtown Manhattan, right? Everyone running around. Mincha, mincha, ashrei beisach, all right. Right, in the airport. The airport is not as bad as it. I'm just telling you what he said they did. I'm not paskining what you should do. I'm just saying, it happens to be that I don't think the Rashiva would have approved, yes. But that's what he said they did. So what they did is they used to go ahead and do things to practice getting not caring. And then they got used to it. That is, and people laugh. And you learn, because laughing is a fear. Like we said this many, many times. The fear, the way you conquer a fear is by doing it. Once you do something, you're not afraid of it anymore. At least not as much. So he said the fear of being laughed at, so once you get laughed at enough and it doesn't hurt you, so the fear is gone. Now, obviously you need a little bit more than one time. So that's what they used to do. They used to practice getting laughed at. I didn't hear from Rabbi Brook, but I heard from Rabbi Kinarik. He said that the Navarikers, he remembers that the Navarikers used to wear their clothes inside out. Okay, I don't know. Akasha Maisa. But he says that who said that this is a nicer side of the jacket? Maybe this side of the jacket is very nice. Look at a nice jacket lining. So they wore their jackets, their clothes inside out. Because we're not gay race, what the world says. The world says this is crazy. We say your way's crazy. Our way's right. And they weren't gay race. The world, and we don't care that you're going to laugh at us. The problem is that we're in Chavetz Chaim, and Chavetz Chaim believes in God as Adam, and probably doesn't believe you can do that. Oh, so now we got a problem, right? You hear the problem. On one end, I want to be a Navardiker. Why do I want to be a Navardiker? Because I really believe, knowing myself, that this is a major, major problem. That many people, not all people, Rabbi Nyman doesn't need this. Right? Rabbi Nyman's gutsy as can be. He'll go knock on the door, and he'll knock on the door, hello, will you give me $1 million? You know, like, he just, you know, like. I mean, I've seen Rabbi Nyman in action. Nothing fazes him. He's amazing. His imam is amazing. But I can't do that, right? So the certain people, including myself, are bashful. So we got to go ahead, but we're afraid. There are some people that are afraid of making phone calls, right? And when we hear made afraid of making phone calls, don't admit it. But made afraid of making phone calls, you know? Well, especially a cold phone call. I never know. What am I going to say? Right? So that's a terrible problem. Because we're too afraid of things. And there are people that are afraid of all kinds of things. So, and especially afraid you're going to be laughed at. You know, there was I think this is before your people's times. Because Ronald Reagan was president. I think it was before your people's time. So in those days, I don't know if it's that way anymore, but the first lady used to always make some campaign. It was a Minigan, the president. that the first I was in. So that was, her name was Nancy Reagan. So her campaign was that they felt that there were people that were taking, a lot of kids were taking drugs, not because they wanted to, but because of social pressure. That the other kids, other friends were pressured. Hey, well, you know, you think you're a goody-goody? Oh, no, I'm not a goody-goody. Okay, I'll take the drugs, right? So the social pressure was causing people to take drugs. So the big slogan that they spent millions of dollars advertising was, just say no. That was her, the big slogan. Just say no. Guy says, I want to take drugs. Say no, I don't take drugs. But that was a, you know, they had to spend millions of dollars on that because people who intellectually knew that they shouldn't be taking drugs and they knew that it's bad for them and they're committing suicide and whatever, but I'm going to be laughed at, right? How many guys in Yeshiva? I had a true story. There was a guy, this is a true story. There was a guy in Israel, when I was a Rebbe in Israel, who was, in high school, he did not learn too much. He was having a very bright guy, but he was in high school, he was a class clown. And okay, he came to Israel, and he continued being the class clown because he came with his whole class, like a whole bunch of guys came. And about midway in the year, he decided he doesn't want to be the class clown anymore. He wants to be serious, he wants to learn. But he can't, you know, he's with all his friends. His friends are, you know, he can't. So he decided he's going to go, wants to go to a different yeshiva. So he spoke to me, and I called up a certain yeshiva, one of our Hedega branches, we don't mention which one, and I called up, said, there's a guy, he wants to come, you know, he wants to start a new leaf. He said, you know, will you accept him? He says, yeah. A few months later, he goes back to America. Fine. You know, a while later, a month or two, I get a phone call from this Rosh Hashiva, this branch. You know, that guy that you said you sent me to us, he never showed up. What happened? I don't know. He's supposed to come. I don't know. Never showed up. So maybe I should have called him. Okay, I didn't do a chatasi. So he never showed up. About a year later, I meet the guy. He was coming a year, 2 years, three. I don't know what happened. You know, he obviously did not look like a Ben Tara too much anymore. So I asked him, hey, you know, what happened? I thought, you know, I set you up. He said, I'll tell you what happened. I came home, and my father picked me up from the airport. And my father said, New, what are your plans? You know, you dropped, you know, flunked Israel, okay, like, you know, to be expected, okay? So now what are you going to do? Now that you flunked Yeshiva, you know, you're continuing your Mahalach HaChaim, you know? He said, well, I'm planning on going to a new yeshiva and turn off a new leaf and get real serious. Says, and my father started to laugh. You're going to become serious. He says, once his father laughed at him, he says, all his resolve went out the way. He says, I couldn't do it anymore. People are laughing at me. I'm going to become serious. That was it. He says, so he never went. Right? As far as I could be Akiva. Akiva decided he couldn't go learn because someone can laugh. This guy says, his father, like, without thinking, it was just a reaction. His father started to laugh. He says, see, that's it. He couldn't go anymore. The guy told me. So the problem is, with a very big problem, but we can't do the Navarra tricks. So what's the Eitza? Yeah.
Do public speaking?
So the Eitza is, right, there are things we could do. Like, that's why I came up, because I'm going to the airport, like someone said. I davened at the airport Sunday. I had a 7 o'clock flight. So I had to dive in at, you know, 5-something in the morning, or 6-something in the morning. So, you know, it's a little embarrassing putting on a towel and filling in the middle of Fort Lauderdale Airport. You know, it's a little bit, you know. Now, Rabbi Jay was on my flight. He put on his tassels. He didn't dive in on the plane. Okay, I don't know. I'm not sure which is worse. He dived in the plane. I dived in the airport. I don't know. Which one is worse? I don't know. What?
The plane is worse.
The plane is worse? Yeah. Plane is worse? No, but he was sitting in the seat. He had an aisle seat. And he had his wife sitting next to him. So the wife didn't, you know. And at the airport, there's like 100 of people walking. There was no, I couldn't find any private area. There's like hundreds of people walking back and forth. I'm not sure which way is worse.
You say when you need to, you should take the opportunity.
Yes. In other words, there are times where it's mutter. You're allowed to wear your tzitzis out. So maybe, you know, it's a halal. But even that, you know, it's a good, that the Shiva let you do.
but
there's everything that I'm saying. But what are you supposed to do when you go to the airport and you didn't dive in? So you're supposed to dive in. What can you do?
Minimize whatever you can.
So, but.
Brian Friedman told me, like, he doesn't put on a talus when he dives to the airport because he doesn't want to show off too much.
Okay. Yeah. Now you got me in trouble. Okay, I don't know. I guess I don't know. I would think that since it's I hear it. Maybe it's a svara, maybe I'm wrong, but I would have thought that since it's better to daven with a talus, it says if you're not, and a tefillin, it says if you're not daven with a tefillin, it's meyadei the sheker, right? It says by tefillin kriyishma. I don't know about talus, but I think talus too. So you have to put on a talus and tefillin. And what can you do? What can you do? You got to do it. Memeda, it's a great opportunity to go ahead and practice your Navarnik. Like Zil, you said, if you have to pub, it's someone they need a speaker. So it's a great opportunity to go ahead. In other words, there are times where it's okay, where it's mutter to go ahead and to walk around with your clothes out, inside out. I don't think that she would have approved of. But to go in and wear your tzitzis out, the Rishita did approve of, right? So I can be a Navarniker wearing my tzitzis out. I can be a Navarniker by standing up when someone in one of the high school fellows plays non-Jewish music in the dorm, or everybody else is playing non-Jewish music. You know, this story, this is a true story. I don't want to say who it was, but this goes back many, many years ago. That there was, I once said this story, and Rabbi Albert got very angry at me, because he says everybody thought that the story was about him, but it wasn't, right? It wasn't about him. But he said that the yeshiva once took on a graduation trip. I think it was Rabbi Chait, but it was, he took them on a graduation trip. But I said it, and he said that everyone thought it was him, so it got him in trouble. And they went to a hotel. They went to Washington, D.C., or whatever they went to, a graduation trip. And they supposedly make sure that there are no televisions in the rooms. But somehow, one room, they made a mistake, and there was a television, was left television with cable, the guys, all kind of good things. One room was left with the cable. So all the kids found out. So after, you know, at night, everyone come to our room. We got television, you know, we got cable, you know. So the whole class, you know, poor Rabbi, it was Rabbi Chait, but I didn't say anything, doesn't know about, he's sleeping in his room. He thinks everyone is behaving. And they all come to this room where there's television. And there was like, I don't know how many kids in that room, supposedly, whatever they were. I don't know. And one kid in that room says, everyone out of here. It's my room. Get out. We're not watching television in my room. And he threw the whole class out. That's guts. No, that's great. That's standing up for what you believe in. You got to be ready to stand up.
Is that really what he should do?
Of course that's what he should do. He should try it. Someone has to stand up for what's right. And he stood up for what's right. The whole kid, I guarantee you, they all respect him. They don't hate him. Because they also know he's right. Right? They know he's right. So, but they know he's right. So now they really, he serves right. You go in, and a different example. You're in the dormitory, right? And somebody starts playing, blasting Geisha music. Even if there's a bunch of people playing, you go and say, excuse me, we don't do that here. So, who are you to tell me?
Is that even if they don't listen to you?
People aren't going to listen. If you know for a fact that people are not going to listen, you're just going to...
You're a big guy. Punch him in the nose. Okay, I hear. What?
I'm the one blasting the music. Someone tells us to do that. I'll punch him in the nose.
Okay, you're right. Good point.
Is that even if they all get mad at you and they all make fun of you?
I don't know. But there is such a thing as not being afraid to stand up. I had a mice. I'm going overtime. I'm off time. I was very upset. I went to Queens for, I told this to many people. It's not a secret. They have, Queens has a Musmochim Shabbos. So they have a Musmochim Shabbos when, you know, that when you're, when they have a, they the parents and the in-laws come to Queens. So they had shower shudders set up in the dining, in the gym, because the dining room, they were having a special Malava Malka for the, right, they may have set up the dining room for a special Malava Malka. So shower shudders they made in the gym. Okay. So you're having here, you have the pictures. It's special Shabbos shower shudders for the graduates. They had lots and lots of guests, all the parents, all the in-laws. We're eating shower shudders. The shmuz was in the base medrash, so none of the rabbeim were there. But you had almost all the guys in yeshiva and a lot of the guests. Meanwhile, some three or four kids came off the street and they decide they want to play. There's a gym. They're playing basketball on Shabbos, right? It's a public gym. Yeshiva's not a private area. It's a public gym. They decide they want to, it's their park. I'm being facetious, but that's how they view it. It's their park. They play, you know, the gym. Like, people come here off the street and they play in our, you know. So they came off the street and they decided to play basketball. So we're eating shower shutters, singing Zmiras, and there's these five kids playing basketball. I assume they were Jewish. I don't know. So, like, why didn't someone tell them to get out of here? Oh, I'm not going to tell them to get out of here. Like, that was a lack of standing up. You know, you can't stand up. A guy should stand up. I was going to, but I just don't understand. Listen, I'm a guest. Yeah, that's my place. But one of the guys in the yeshiva should go to these kids and say, excuse me, but can you please get out of here? You know, is it trespassing? You know, this is. But no one had the guts to go up and tell these little 13-year-olds, or, you know, I don't know, they weren't, probably even, weren't even that, like, 8-year-old, 9-year-old, 10-year-old kids to get out of here.
It's Bezer Rabin. You embarrass them.
Bezer Rabin. They were, right? People, regretfully, very often, I don't mean everyone. Again, there are some people that are so gutsy, they have to work the other way. They got to learn to turn down their guts. too gutsy, you know? We had a guy in Israel, he was so gutsy, he wasn't satisfied with sleep. You know, sometimes you have bunk bed, you don't want to sleep on a bunk bed. He went and he made a four-pole dump bed. Put one, and he slept on the fourth level. he was like the soup most gutsy person I've ever seen in my life. He had to do things wild, crazy. So, okay, but most people are not like that. So we have to go ahead. It's a great thing, that especially for Purim. This is the tekuva, l'kam v'lozami manu, right? So you have to work on not being, what do you say? You can't be like, you become crazy. No, I do think so. I think it's a big problem for many people, including myself. And, you know, it's important to me to work on that. We have to not be afraid of people. Someone may have to make a phone call. The yeshiva has a learn-a-thon. You got to call. So you call people. You know, I'm going to call. I don't know the person. I'm going to ask my uncle so-and-so for a donation. Yeah, you know, you call him up. You say, yeshiva's having a learn-a-thon. Can you give us money? Right, you know, you have to be a little gutsy. And you're going to call up some stranger you never met and you're going to ask them for a donation? Yes. You know, that's what makes you not, you have to teach and learn how to be gutsy. So, regretfully, we can't do what the Navarnikas did. I mean, I always felt bad because I would have loved to have been a Navarnika. But regretfully, you can't do it. But there are ways of doing it. The reason I would have loved to be a Navarnika because I have this problem. So if I could do, maybe that would solve my problem.
Hey, what should some of our guys should be to combat the fact that they feel like embarrassed or whatever?
But I'm saying that the way you give solve it is a little bit, even Rabbi Akiva, is by doing it. You see, Rabbi Akiva was afraid to go learn. Why? So why wasn't he afraid to take this animal for 3 days? I guess 3 days he could handle. Go to learn, they're going to laugh at him, he thought, for the whole year. So that he couldn't handle. His wife told him for 3 days to go to the market. So, okay. So you can handle 3 days. And meanwhile, you learn that it doesn't hurt so much. You make that first phone call, and you ask the guy, and he may even give you. And if he doesn't give you, okay. So he hung up the phone on you. You know, I hung up the phone on someone today. What happened is a guy, fourth time in the middle of it, he called me about my Amazon account. Four times a day, the guy, they called me about my Amazon account.
Should we have an Amazon
account? No, I do not have an Amazon account. But there has been suspicious activity on my Amazon account. I finally got upset with the guy. I actually pushed the one to speak to someone and said, you idiot, stop calling.
Would you advise guys to where they just said?
Why not?
All are banned them.
Okay, there happens to be, we're getting off on a different topic. When I was in the yeshiva told the guys not to wear their tzitzis out till we went to Eretz Yisrael, because the Mishneh Berurah says that you're supposed to wear your tzitzis out. Mishneh Berurah says it's better to wear your tzitzis out. However, if you're among the goyim are going to laugh at you. Therefore, you don't have to. So the Frum yeshiva is all learned that you don't have to, but of course it's better to be mesiras nefesh and to wear it out. And the yeshiva learned the Mishneh Berurah that it's bad for your midas to be laughed at because it's not good or hurt your feeling of God that's all them, whatever. Anyway, he says you shouldn't wear them out. So we told the guys not to wear it out. We went to Eretz Yisrael in 70, whatever it was, and he said, listen, there's no heter in Eretz Yisrael. So in Eretz Yisrael, you have to wear it out because it's the only heter the goyim going to laugh at you. Came back to America, he told us to put them back in. But then, about 10 years later, the Rashiva came and said, I heard him with that. He said that, this was where I left the yeshiva, he came to Israel. He says that the people are starting to dress so crazy, right? These people who want their underwear out. I saw a chiddush. Mamish Friday, I saw a chiddush and gemayel. You know, they have a style that you wear your underwear half out, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's a new thing. There's a chiddush. The guy was wearing shorts, and they were made that they should look like they were half of it was his underwear. They were really one piece. But he wanted to be in style, so the shorts were, they were, the first half were underwear, and then the next, you can wear a regular pair of shorts, one piece, but people will think you're wearing your underwear out, so you can have, you know, you can be in style. Anyway, so Rashiva said that people today dress in so crazy that they're not going to laugh at you because you wear your tzitzis out. So he felt he should. So Rabbi Naiman of Hashem used to come every year when he used to come. He said, did Rashiva really say that to you? Because he didn't believe me. Because he said he never heard that from Rashiva. I said, yeah, I heard it. And then the next year coming, did Rashiva really say that? And yeah, so the old Rosh Hashiva, the old Talmidim from Rashiva, don't wear it out because Rashiva told them not to. You know, they, you know, Dr. Begida will refuse her. I said, I heard from Rashiva not to wear it out, you know. But I heard from Rashiva that he changed his mind because of the Svara, that the whole reason not to wear it out is because it's going to laugh at you. He says, today no one laughs. He says, today you won't get a chuckle for sitters out. Well, I know that already might be a little bit more, you know, strings hanging.
You have, like,
okay.
Arabs, like, doing their, you know, five tefillos a day in, like, the middle of Orlando.
Yeah,
like,
okay.
Anybody's going to laugh at you because you have some weird boxes on your head?
Yeah. What's that, a bomb?
Yeah, you have weird boxes and you have this cloth on your head.
Is it any worse than a bunch of Arabs bowing
what?
Down?
No, it's
little,
not
like,
worse, but it's...
You're still giving a bunch of out there to obey him. Okay, I don't know.
Whatever
you advise a guy to do. I know, you do whatever you want. You know, everyone. I just say that I heard Rashiva say that he changed. Rashiva used to say to wear it in. Rashiva himself wore it around his belt, so it wasn't so noticeable. But it was, you know, you have to. And I asked the Rebbetzin's father, Rav Avram Trupp, who was the Rashiva in Raleigh, what the Chafetz Chaim did, and he said that the Chafetz Chaim wore his tzitzis out, but he always wore a jacket on top of it, so you never saw them. Because he went outside, he always wore a jacket, so you never saw his tzitzis. He probably also buttoned up his jacket, not like the American style, you have a jacket on. So he had a jacket and it was buttoned. So he said, so you went outside, you didn't see it. But he wore it out, but he just didn't see it. don't know.
Isn't that counterproductive?
I'm just telling you what, I don't know. It was interesting.
Rabbi Kier said at the end of the Rosh Hashiva's life, when he was in Shiva, that the Rosh Hashiva used to do that. He used to wear them out and put the jacket over them.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Really,
the whole thing. What? No, the jacket was to wear a jacket, but Memeda it also, you know, so it was Yaitzi both. Now, I think the Shiva held that it's, you know, in those days, the world was a proper world, and you didn't want people laughing at you. I'll just say, I have to end with one last story, because I'm in a mood of wasting time with story, then we got to go. I heard this story from Rav Zaidu Epstein. This has nothing to do with anything except it's a good story. It's a little related. You know, there's a shaila of shaking hands with women. So many people are, you know, there's different svarhatar. There are whatever. But most people don't, you know, the problem is that, I'm so embarrassed. I'm going to tell her I don't shake hands with her. She's going to think I'm a nut, right? That's the biggest. I'm going to tell her, I don't shake hands with ladies, you know? So, maybe there are at that, whatever, I'm not passing. So Rav Zaidu Epstein told me the following story, that there was the chief rabbi in England was Rav Herzog, was appointed the chief rabbi of England. And he got appointed. And a little bit after he got appointed, the chief rabbi in England, he's in those days, I don't know what it is now, is an official member of the cabinet, because they're very proper England. So in the cabinet, there's the prime minister, foreign minister, the head of the Catholic of the English Church. I don't think they have a Catholic Church. The head of the English Church and the chief, basically all the most chashuv people in the country. But he's also in the cabinet, so he just gets appointed, and they tell him that you have to come to the airport. He says why? Because the minig was with the queen, when she would leave the country to come, the whole cabinet would come out to greet her. Okay, so he goes to the airport, and he's standing there with all the chashuvim of the country, right? Prime Minister. And the Queen walks off the plane, they're all lined up. And the Prime Minister kisses her hand. And then the Foreign Minister kisses her hand. And she's basically walking down with her arm out, and everybody kisses her hand. And then the head of the Catholic Church, the Christian Church, English Church, and then she gets to Rabbi Herzog. Sorry. So now, I was saying, if he had the guts not to kiss the Queen of England in front of all the most kosher people in England, so I can tell that schnooky lady that I don't shake her hands. That was my Kavah Chomer. Not passing, but it was a hagasha that he had the guts to do that. You know, the queen. I'm in a store, and there's some dinky. You know, I don't want to be say anything, but you know, not the most hush of a lady. And she sticks out a cashier. She sticks out her hand to me. She's not the Queen of England, and it's not in front of the Prime Minister. And you know, so if he had the guts to do that. So that's, I don't have the guts to.
The svara by Rabbi Kiva's wife, was it that she was telling him like the Navardic svara to get used to it? Or was
no,
she just telling him
no.
Like it's going to end after 3 days?
She was telling the other svara, then we'll end after 3 days. But I don't think we have that to do it 3 days. Maybe go to the airport 3 days in a row. And I don't think.
They're different people.
Oh, because different people. Oh, it doesn't work. You have to go to the same. I did not see you yesterday. All right. Yes, you got it.